Good day, and welcome to the Cigna Autism Awareness Series conference call. Today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Kristen Martson. Please go ahead, ma'am.
Thank you, Kelly. Welcome, and thank you for calling into Cigna's Autism Awareness Series. My name is Kristen Martson, and I'm a care manager for the autism team at Cigna. Due to the format of this call, you will not be able to ask questions during the teleconference. However, at the end of this conference, you will be transferred into a brief five-question survey in which we are requesting your feedback regarding your experience in today's seminar. After this survey, you will be able to ask questions on today's presentation. A handout for today's seminar is available online at www.cigna.com/autism. Scroll to Current Topics section in the middle of your page and click on today's topic labeled How to Help Your Child with Autism Sleep Better. Please note that not all policies cover today's topic. For more specific information, if your policy covers topics discussed in today's seminar, please contact the autism team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing Jing Zhou. Jing is a board-certified behavior analyst and the president and executive director of Interventions Unlimited in Florida. She has extensive experience working with individuals with autism, Asperger's syndrome, mental handicaps, traumatic brain injury, emotional disabilities, and other developmental disabilities. She specializes in setting up verbal behavior programs, teaching functional communication and social skills, decreasing severe problem behaviors, as well as school and inclusion consultations. Jing, thank you for being here today. You are more than welcome to start your presentation.
Thank you, Kristen, for the introduction. And hello. And I have worked with children on the autism spectrum for over 20 years. And during my work with these families, sleeping problems have been very common among the children that I have worked with. And yet this is an area where parents don't get a lot of help. First of all, because the bedtime or in the middle of the night is usually not the normal work hours for most professionals. And also some parents think it is a normal part of childhood and hoping that their child will grow out of it someday. And however, the sleeping problems usually have a profound negative impact on the child and the family, and that is why I chose this topic, and I hope this could be helpful for the parents who call in today. And I hope everyone has downloaded or opened the handout from the website, so you will see lots of pictures of children sleeping, and we're talking about sleeping, and I hope that it's not going to make everybody sleepy. And please stay awake, and because there is good information that I'm hoping that could be helpful to parents. And I will mention the number of the slide that as I talk, and so you can follow me and know which slide that I'm on. And the next slide will be slide number 2. And we all know that optimal sleep is very important for normal growth and development and the emotional health and immune system and for the immune function. And we could all know how it feels when you don't get a good night's sleep, and you may feel cranky, irritable, tired, and lack of motivation, don't feel like you want to do anything. And all parents of young children probably know that their child can be challenging, so if the child did not sleep well the night before. I have a 6-year-old boy who is a typically developing child, and it is the number one mission in our house to make sure that he gets his 10 to 11 hours of sleep and that he goes to bed on time. So that is important for all of us to have a good day the next day. And last night, it was kind of challenging because of all the activities, and he didn't go to bed until 8, which is about 30 minutes later than his normal schedule, normal bedtime, and this morning was pretty rough for us, and he did not want to wake up, did not want to get up, and was having a tantrum, was crying as I was trying to rush him to get ready for school. So that kind of started our day, in a negative way. I'm sure a lot of parents experience that pretty frequently, and when the child is not sleeping very well, and that affects everybody in the family. And this does not just apply to children on the spectrum, and that applies to all children. And in typically developing children, and sleep problems and the lack of sleep and can cause daytime sleepiness and learning problems and behavioral issues such as hyperactivity, poor attention, lack of cooperation, and sometimes aggression. And it has been found that in young children that sleeping longer is associated with better adaptability, such as tolerating changes in the routines and positive moods. And in my child's situation, and he's usually more flexible and reasonable, and when things don't go his way, if he had better sleep, and if he didn't sleep well, then he is usually not very cooperative and hard to reason with him. A lack of good night's sleep can affect not only the child, but everyone in the family. If your child stays awake until 2 o'clock in the morning, or your child wakes up at 4 o'clock in the morning and does not go back to sleep, and that means you're not sleeping. And the child can also wake up his brothers or sisters. And if you experience this night after night, day after day, you get tired and irritable, and each night may bring more anxiety, so you might wonder whether you're going to get sleep tonight or not. And one study showed that parents of autistic children sleep less and have poorer sleep quality and wake up earlier than parents of non-autistic children. And so the sleep problems can definitely have a negative impact on the family, so it can affect the relationship of the parents, and sleep deprivation can cause depression and affect the concentration and moods in a negative way. And slide number 3. And sleep problems are fairly common among young children. So many young children experience some kind of sleep problems some point so in their childhood. And it is one of the most common complaints parents bring to their pediatricians. And it is usually considered a common childhood problem and are associated with learning problems at school. And however, sleep problems seem to occur more often in people with special needs, so especially among children with autism. And a survey of children with a range of developmental disabilities have kind of discovered that about 80% of parents reported some problem with their child's sleep, and that 1 out of 4 of these parents described the problems as severe. And the parents also indicated that unlike the other children without disabilities, so their children did not seem to grow out of these sleep problems, and usually the sleep problems continued so into adulthood. So they'll have adults that having problems so with sleeping. And it is estimated that between 40 and 80% of children on the spectrum have difficulty with sleeping. And there have been some research showing that there is definitely a connection, so between the lack of sleep and aggression, depression, hyperactivity, and increased behavior problems, irritability, and poor learning, and cognitive performance, so with children with autism. So we know for children with special needs who already have difficulty with learning, so the added interference with learning definitely is not in their favor. And slide number 4. And here are some frequently reported sleep problems, so that I hear that a lot from the parents that I work with. And most of the complaints are their children have difficulty falling asleep. They will not go to bed at their regular time, and they get disruptive, so or may get really hyperactive around bedtime. And another problem usually I hear parents complain about is their difficulty staying asleep. They wake up pretty frequently at night, or when they wake up, they are awake for long periods of time and they want to play, or they get up and engage in problem behaviors and not going back to sleep. And other problems reported by parents are that the child is sleepy during the day, and at nighttime they're not sleepy, and then they don't want to go to sleep and stays awake until like 2 o'clock. and which can be a problem for the child and for his parents as well. Many poor children usually have more than one sleep problem, and most of these problems are often interconnected, so it's not just one. They could have several of these problems, and which makes it very rough on the parents' part so that they feel very sleep deprived. And slide number five. And researchers don't really know exactly for sure why children with autism seem to have more problems with sleeping. And here are some theories that, just for information, it's not really proven, so it's just some hypotheses for why these children have more difficulty. And the first one has to do with the social cues. And our body usually tells us when it's time to go to sleep in a 24-hour cycle because of the normal cycle of the light and dark and our body clocks. But we also use social cues. For example, children may see their brothers and sisters getting ready for bed or seeing their parents starting the bedtime routine and know that it's time to go to bed and respond accordingly. But children with autism who usually have difficulty communicating may misinterpret or didn't understand these cues. So when they see these cues, they may interpret going to bed as a time to jump on the bed as a trampoline. So another theory has to do with a hormone called melatonin, and which normally helps regulate the sleep and wake cycle. And when it gets dark and the brain releases melatonin, which makes us sleepy, to make melatonin, the body needs an amino acid called tryptophan, which some of the researchers have found to be either higher or lower than normal in some children with autism. And they have kind of noticed that some children, their body releases the melatonin at the wrong time of the day so that they could have higher levels of melatonin during the daytime and lower level at night, so which kind of keeps them awake and make them more alert at nighttime, so when they're supposed to be feeling sleepy. So that's one of the theories. So, and the parents can definitely discuss with their physician so about the hormone levels. Another reason possibly children with autism may have trouble falling asleep and also wake up in the middle of the night could be the increased sensitivity to outside stimuli, such as like touch or sound. So most kids would probably continue to sleep while their mothers open the bedroom door or tuck in the covers. But child with autism may wake up more easily, so when they, if someone comes into the room or the parents are coming to tuck the blanket for them. Anxiety is another possible condition that could interfere with sleep, and children with autism tend to test higher than other children for anxiety. And sometimes medication that the your child may be taking can be interfering with sleeping as well. So many children on the spectrum are prescribed Ritalin, so to control the hyperactivity, and Ritalin seems to cause sleep problems, so in some children. And you can certainly discuss these with the physician if you feel like the medication, the side effect of the medication could be interfering with your child's sleep. Slide number six. And how much sleep does the child need? And each child needs a slightly different amount of sleep. So in general, here are the amount of sleep children require by kind of their age. Here's the information from the sleepfoundation.org. For preschool children, usually they need between 11 to 13 hours of sleep. And school-age children, about 10 to 11 hours of sleep. And for adolescents, about 9 1/4 hours. And your child might be sleeping a little less or more than these normal range, But if your child wakes up easily and is usually happy when he wakes up and does not seem to be tired or falling asleep during the day, and you know your child is probably getting enough sleep, so your child is the one that best indicates so if he's getting enough sleep. Slide number 7. And fortunately, many of these childhood sleep problems can be resolved with some behavioral intervention, and such as establishing new sleep routines and sleep associations, and establishing new schedules, and setting appropriate limits on the child's bedtime behaviors. And your child might need a behavioral intervention plan and need some reinforcers to reinforce your child for cooperation with the new bedtime routine or sleep routine. And that would require the parents to make some changes as well in how they proceed with the sleep routine or bedtime routine. And here I will be discussing more of the behavioral interventions. There could also be other causes of the sleep problem that could be medically related. So I would strongly encourage parents to discuss with their physicians to discuss any possible medical cause of the sleep problems. As far as for like all the behavioral interventions, so we first need to figure out what seems to be the problem and the circumstances around the problem. And a sleep journal is usually where we begin. And in the next slide, you will see an example of the sleep journal. So I usually give the sleep journal to the parents to track how their all the events or factors that are related to their child sleeping for a week or sometimes 2 weeks, so we can have a better idea what the problems are, what is associated with the problems. The sleep journal gives information about the child's sleep-wake schedule and what happens when the child has disruptive behaviors during bedtime and what happens when the child wakes up in the middle of the night. And also some of the behaviors that children engages in around bedtime or waking up, and then just kind of see how parents are responding to these behaviors. So many children with, or even typical children, might experience or exhibit some kind of disruptive behaviors around bedtime, so such as like crying or calling out their parents, I want more water, and coming out of their room. And but children on the autism spectrum can have behaviors that are more extreme, so that would cause more additional concern. So through the sleep journal, we would like to know, does the child have a regular bedtime and wake time? Does the child have a bedtime routine that is the same every day? And does the child, how does the child fall asleep? So we can find out if there's any inappropriate sleep association. And does the child play in bed? And how long does it take for the child to fall asleep? And does the child wake up in the middle of the night and become disruptive? And we want to find out and how the behaviors are handled. And there are many different sleep problems, so, and sometimes a similar problem may have different causes in different children, and the single problem could have like multiple contributing factors, so each child is different. The sleep journal provides information about your particular child and what the problems might be associated with your child. And next slide, you see the example of the sleep journal. And you're certainly welcome to use it to track the circumstances around your child's sleep problems and discuss it with your behavior analyst if you are working with a behavior analyst, and together that you may be able to come up with some intervention to help your child sleep better. Okay, slide number 9. Okay, after we start with gathering information, and by using the sleep journal, and we're ready to make some changes. And the first place to start is usually to establish good sleep routines. And sleep routines are very different among families. So among all the parents that I've worked with over the years, and I asked them, how does your child fall asleep and what do you do, what happens before bedtime? And you find out every family is different, so how the child sleeps. Some children may sleep with clothes on, some children may sleep without clothes, and some children may sleep in their own room, or some children may start out falling asleep in their parents' bed and then be moved to their own bed, or some children would only fall asleep with lights on or with music, and some children may kind of, yes, started saying goodnight downstairs and then go upstairs to his room by themselves, or only falling asleep after having a story read to them. So there are many variations so in the sleep routines. So when we talk about sleep routines, so we're talking about pretty much all the activities that take place as you prepare your child for bed and while your child falls asleep. And some routines work better than others, and some routines are more likely to help your child develop good sleep patterns and avoid problems. So when I work with parents, we usually start out with the routine. So let's take a look at what happens in your house before, during the maybe hour leading up to bedtime. So through sleep journal, we will see what's happening and whether it's consistent or not. And having the same consistent routine can have a calming effect on most children and signals that it is time to sleep. Because many young children don't have a good sense of time and don't seem to have a whole lot of control over what happens in their life. So having a routine seems to give them a little bit more predictability, and having a routine helps them to feel a sense of time and knowing what comes next, so, and what would be the next activity, and feel a little bit more in control and knowing what's going to happen. And having a consistent routine can also help reduce problem behaviors. And if it's consistent, the child knows exactly what to expect, and we will resist less. And that would kind of reduce problem behaviors and also conflicts. And so, for example, if you're running out of time one day and decide to skip bath, and your child may protest and not wanting to take a bath the next day, and if your child requests just one more story or another book, and then you grant the request, okay, today we'll read three books. And tomorrow your child may ask for the same, and we are saying, how about today we'll just only read one book or two books, and your child may resist and may protest. So it's important to have the same consistent routine, and the child knows exactly what to expect and what to follow. And it is important to cut down bedtime problem behaviors, because the more they engage in crying and tantrum, and they could be more alert and can wake up them furthermore, which would make it difficult for them to fall asleep. And I listed some tips here in that slide, and I will go over some of them more in detail in the next few slides. One of the things I definitely also want to mention is to definitely avoid electronics, such as watching TV or playing on the iPad or other electronic games prior to bedtime. So a lot of children on the spectrum are fascinated, so are very much attracted to computers or iPads, so the games. And these electronic devices with bright light, and also like watching TV, the fast-moving scenes, so they can be stimulating for children and makes it difficult for them to fall asleep. Okay, slide number 10. And let's talk a little bit about how to help your child to follow a routine. So So when you might examine your own bedtime routine and decide this routine is not working for you, or if you kind of decided that, well, geez, we've not had a routine to begin with, and you want to establish a routine or establish a new routine that might help you better, and your child might need some help to follow a new routine or to cooperate with you as you're trying to establish some changes. And I will kind of give you some suggestions and tips. First, it is very important to make the bedtime routine positive, and it's something that your child looks forward to, because we don't want the bedtime to be associated with negative events, to send the message, now you need to stop something pleasant and now go to bed, and then that's going to be taken on a negative association. So build a pleasant routine that your child looks forward to. So if your child likes deep pressure, like most children on the spectrum do, and you can make a massage or back rub or some arm or leg squeezes a part of the routine, so your child would really enjoy that. That helps your child relax as well. And if your child likes music, you can play some soft, soothing music as part of the bedtime routine, and read your child's favorite books or stories. And but what's important is the final activity of the routine should be in the room that your child sleeps in. So he will learn to look forward to going to his room and going to bed. So if the routine, the pleasant routine and all these fun activities, so that makes him happy, if they take place somewhere else and your child is going to learn him that he has to leave a pleasant place to go to bed, and the bed in the bedroom will take on negative association, and then your child may resist more to go into bed. And second, it's important to reward any cooperation your child exhibits. In behavior intervention, we often use shaping and reinforcement of any cooperation. And you can use a token system or a point system or stickers or other reinforcers to reward your child for following a routine. And if the child, if your child has behavior problems other than the bedtime, and the bedtime behavior can be a part of the overall behavior plan. So if you're working with a behavior analyst and he or she can help you design a behavior program that addresses the bedtime problem behaviors. And it is important to reward any of the cooperation your child exhibits. For children that are high functioning, one of the interventions that was successful is to use bedtime passes. That has been successful for typical children or children that are high functioning. And for example, some children won't stay in their room, so they're frequently coming out of their room and saying, I need drink, I need water, calling out to their parents or crying or asking for more kisses, and just don't want to stay in their room. Bedtime passes were given, so they get one, the child gets one free pass each night, and the child can get up and use the pass to get up for various reasons. And after the bedtime pass is used, the child must stay in bed for the rest of the night. So any behaviors will be ignored, and coming out of the room will be redirected back to the bed, so without giving too much attention. While you are instituting a bedtime routine, it is important for both parents to be consistent and to also set limits so the child learns what expectations are, so and learns that the parents are in charge. With children on the spectrum, so another important thing to keep in mind in terms of setting up a routine is to make some variations, and because children on the spectrum, they latch onto routines very easily and can take it to an extreme and get upset when something changes in the routine. So it's important to build some variation in the routine to allow some flexibility, so from the very beginning. So, for example, and you can keep the order and timing of activities the same, but you can make variations such as choosing different books and different stories or different songs. And I've worked with a little boy in the past so that he wanted to read the same book before bed every day. And one day his parents could not find the book. It was probably chewed up by the dog. And he had a big tantrum and carried on for a very long time, so before settling down. So it is important to consider what variations can you make so that way your child is not stuck with one particular item and might get upset if that changes. And slide number 11, and talking about establishing a good sleep-wake schedule. And a consistent schedule are very important in treating any sleep disorders. And regardless of what age your child is and what's the cause of the problem, a regular and appropriate schedule will help the treatment achieve more success. And it helps the child establish a good sleep-wake pattern in a 24-hour day. Usually, based on your sleep journal, and you find out how much time your child needs to sleep, and then you work backwards. And, for example, if you, based on your journal, if you let your child sleep without waking him up, so you let your child wake up on his own, and you have found out your child needs about 11 hours of sleep to be a happy camper the next day, and then you look at what time he needs to get up for school or like in the morning, and you decide he needs to get up at 7 o'clock in order to be at school on time. And then you work backwards. And that means the best bedtime for your child will be 8 o'clock at night, and you will start your bedtime routine about 7:30, so for your child to be in bed by 8 o'clock, so he'll get enough sleep. So it is important to keep the same sleep-wake schedule and during the week as well as on weekends. So if during the week you have one sleep schedule, and weekends, and allow your child to sleep in or stay up late. And then when Monday comes, your child has to adjust to a new schedule again. So some children can adjust the changes in their sleep-wake schedule very easily. But if your child is one of the ones that has difficulty adjusting to those changes, so it is very important to keep the same sleep-wake schedule. So when that time comes for bed, they will feel sleepy and ready for bed. And next, slide number 12, talking about exercise. Our body temperature changes throughout the day. So we're usually more alert when our body temperature increases, and we get drowsy and sleepy if our body temperature decreases. And if the child exercises during the day and his body temperature will rise, because right after the exercise, and then his body usually compensates by decreasing the temperature about 4 to 6 hours later. And if you time it right, your child probably will be sleepy at the right time you want it to be. So it is important to have the children or help your child engage in some physical activities in the afternoon about 4 to 6 hours before bedtime. So that way it'll raise his body temperature, and then around bedtime the body temperature will drop and your child will feel sleepy. And the researchers have shown that couch potatoes have more trouble sleeping than people who regularly exercise. So in the afternoons, take your child to the playground or swim in the summer or ride the bicycle, and that can only help to have a better night's sleep later on. Try to avoid any vigorous activities such as roughhousing and right before bedtime. and too much activities before bed can increase the body temperature. So that makes the child more alert and harder to fall asleep. I know dads usually like to roughhouse with their children, especially boys. And sometimes after work and you come home late, seems like after dinner, before bedtime is the only time. So you get to play with your kids. And then they kind of started playing and roughhousing. And I hear that a lot from the parents describing what happens before the bedtime. So I would say definitely try to avoid those activities before bedtime if your child has problem falling asleep at night. Next slide, number 13. We will talk about the sleep environment. It is very important to associate the bedroom with sleeping and not with playing or other activities. And sorry, I'm going to be using an example of going to the bathroom. So I'm sure we have all experienced at some point. So if you don't feel like you need to go to the bathroom, but you went in with your child and then all of a sudden you feel like you needed to go. So because bathrooms have been so strongly associated with bathroom activities, so and it kind of signals our body to react so that we needed to go. So we want the bedroom and the bed to do the same, so to be strongly associated with sleeping. And so when your child is in the bedroom or laying down in bed, the environment is sending out the signal that it is time to sleep and it is time to be sleepy. If you are looking at your sleep journal, write down as much information as possible. And you can take a look to see what takes place in the bedroom and in bed. So if your child has been playing in the bedroom or playing in bed, so and that could be signaling to them it's time to play. Like my son used to like to play pillow fight, so with my husband in bed, and he got very excited and enjoyed the activity. And then when we put him to bed, and he wanted to play pillow fight, so because that's what he was associating with. So when we go to bed, we play, so we pillow fight, so we then he would have trouble falling asleep. And we had to quickly change that activity, so to not allow that in bed. And one of the treatments for adults with insomnia is also to restrict activities in bed to only to sleep and not to work in bed or read or watching TV and do other activities in bed. And like myself, sometimes I work a little bit at night, so while sitting in bed, working on my laptop or iPad, so which usually would make it difficult for me to fall asleep later on, so my brain would not shut down and I'll be thinking about work. So for your child, it's also very, very important to only associate bedroom and bed with sleep. If the room is the only space your child can play, but at least limit the play activities to the floor and use the bed only for like bedtime stories and sleeping. And next slide, number 14, and I will talk a little bit about how to address the problem of the difficulty many children experience in falling asleep. So they just could not fall asleep at the time that you want to. I was doing a presentation, a parent workshop, so a couple of years ago, also talking about sleeping issues. So I had a parent who was at the workshop and was telling me that her 4-year-old girl would fight going to bed, and she would try to stay awake as long as possible, and she would cry and would have tantrum when it was time to lie down or when her mother left the room, and her mother would have to lie down with her until she fell asleep. And she would wake up several times at night and cry until her mother returned. So for years, her poor mother ended up sleeping on a mattress, so in her daughter's room. and because she was tired of getting up several times at night and returning to her room, so she said, I might as well just stay in her room so it would be easier to comfort her, to help her go back to sleep. And her mother was frustrated and tired, and she was not getting good sleep on her own, and it also put stress on their marriage. And she thought, she kind of learned to tolerate it, as she kind of felt her child needed her and felt guilty for not being there for her if her child cried out or called for her, and she could not stand to hear her cry, so that's why she felt she needed to be there. That probably sounds familiar to many parents, and that's certainly something I also experienced when my child was very young and really needed me to lie down with him for him to fall asleep and waking up and calling for me to return. So until we had put some intervention in place. So that is normal for a lot of children wanting to have the adults to be there to help them fall asleep. But it's not anything that you have to tolerate. So either you can, if that's not pleasant so for you, it's interfering for your own sleep, so we can definitely put in intervention to change that. Many parents have told me that the bedtime is a battle for them, so the child gets very disruptive and doesn't want to go to bed, and the child consistently comes out of the room or engages in problem behaviors so to keep their parents in the room until they fall asleep. So here our goal is for the child to learn to fall asleep quickly at the desired bedtime. So once the child lies down and would fall asleep within minutes. So that will be our goal. And for children who will not fall asleep on their own, the problem is usually related to problem sleep association. So the child has not learned to soothe himself or herself to fall asleep without the parent's help at night. And the parent may have to rub their backs, lay down with them, or talk to them, or sing to them, and for them to fall asleep. And often these children will wake up in the middle of the night crying and calling out and require the same condition to be restored for them to fall back asleep. And the parents may be frustrated as your own sleep is disrupted and you are tired, and the parents may feel guilty as they feel they needed to do what's best for their child and need to be there. So many parents have expressed to me, so like, what should I do? I feel like I need to be there, but yeah, is there any hope for this? So I say, well, definitely yes. So we can, look at some possible intervention. It is very important to teach your child to fall asleep on his own, because how he falls asleep affects how he wakes up in the middle of the night. And usually if we address the problem of falling asleep, and the waking up problem improves on its own as well. So that can be very usually interrelated. And I'm going to use the analogy so from Dr. Ferber's book, because that seems to be, so far, that's the best analogy I've seen that helps parents understand the sleep association. So we all wake up in the middle of the night, so briefly, a few times at night, and just between sleep cycles, so it is normal to wake up briefly. We call those brief wakings. And usually when we wake up in the middle of the night, so we subconsciously check out to see if things are the same as we went to sleep. If everything were the same, and we normally just roll over and fall right back asleep. So in the morning when we wake up, we usually probably don't remember so these wakings. But if we wake up, we hear strange noises and smell something funny, we usually wake up a little bit more and fully to investigate to see what's going on. So, and usually when we wake up, if we notice our spouse is not right next to you, to us, if we're missing our pillow, and you may notice more, so, and wake up more. And you may sometimes wake up just enough to find the pillow on the floor, and then you put it back into your bed and go back to sleep. But if you cannot find your pillow, you would wake up a little bit more fully and even get up to search the room and to find your pillow, and may get frustrated and if you could still not find your pillow. So if we stretch this a little bit more, if you figure out that someone has been sneaking into your room each night to steal your pillow while you're asleep, you might have trouble falling asleep, afraid that your pillow will be missing as soon as you're asleep. And imagine that every night you go to sleep with something just the way you like it, and only to wake up, say, find yourself on the kitchen floor. And the first reaction you will be get up and climb back to your bed. As you go back to your bed, you find the door is locked and you couldn't go back to your bed. And you can't really do anything but to wake up someone who can unlock the door for you. And then you go back to bed, and during your next waking, you find yourself on the floor again and locked out of your room again. So you'll have trouble falling asleep in your own bed, so knowing what will happen. So this is kind of an analogy. This is actually what many children experience every night. They fall asleep in one condition and wake up in a different condition. Things have changed. So when they fall asleep, one of the parents, usually probably mom, is in the room with them, or mom might be patting their back or laying down with them, and then when they wake up, mom is not there anymore. And your child might think when he falls asleep, the light was on and there was music playing. And then when he wakes up in the middle of the night and the room is dark and there's no more music, it's quiet. So from the child's perspective, and things have changed, something is wrong. So when they notice something is wrong and they show frustration, so usually it's by crying out for their parents or calling out to their parents or getting out of the bed and looking for their parents and trying to get someone to help them restore the condition that they fell asleep in so they can go back to sleep. And if that happens over and over, they're worried so that when they fall asleep, things are going to change, and therefore they have difficulty falling asleep. Just like we might worry somebody may come into our room and steal our pillow when you're falling asleep. So that could cause some problem going back to sleep when they wake up in the middle of the night. So children have many different sleep associations that could be a problem, so that when they wake up, they wouldn't be able to restore that condition without another person, without an adult's help. And I have another parent who told me that her 9-year-old sleeps in their room on a chair, and he would not sleep in his own room, and that's the only way that all of them can get some sleep. So sometimes parents get very frustrated and just kind of give in if that's how you're going to sleep, and let's all sleep, and then you can just stay in the room and curled up in a chair. One of the methods that when I work with parents is called progressive waiting, and it's also called graduated extinction. And it is a method to teach children to fall asleep on their own. And here's what you would do. And you will put your child to bed at the time that you desire, and then quickly leave the room. And then you will pick a time that you would go back to check on your child. So you can start with 2 minutes or 3 minutes, whatever you feel comfortable with. And let's say 5 minutes. You will go back to check on your child in 5 minutes. And when you go back, you're only there briefly to assure your child that everything is okay, that he's safe, and that you are nearby, that you're not going there to help him fall asleep. And then you would leave the room shortly. And then next time when you go back to check, you would wait a longer period of time. So you would go back after, say, 7 minutes. and then do the same, briefly check on your child, and then leave the room while the child is still awake. And then your next visit might be 9 minutes. You can increase 1 minute between each waiting or 2 minutes, depending on what you feel comfortable with. And then on the first night, you establish your maximum waiting time would be 10 minutes. And then you would check back on your child every 10 minutes until your child falls asleep on his own. And your child may be crying and having a tantrum, but between those checks, you would ignore the crying and ignore those problem behaviors and direct the child back to his room. And the goal is to teach the child to fall asleep under the same condition as he will wake up in the middle of the night. So the child wakes up finding him in the same place as he falls asleep under the same condition. And this method is very effective. So usually about 3 to 4 nights and you are going to see some kind of improvements. And however, it can be difficult to implement for parents who have young children. So if your child is a toddler or even like 1-year-old or a lot of parents will tell me, so it is very hard for them to hear their child cry and they just can't tolerate the crying. So a couple of minutes just feels like forever. So that can be difficult. So, and you might need more support while you are implementing this intervention, and you don't want to start it during times that you need more sleep yourself. So you might pick like a weekend so that where if you don't get to sleep because the first night your child could be crying and screaming for a very long time, so that during the day weekends you can catch up on your sleep. Another method for parents who cannot tolerate the crying, so we call it graduated feeding. So it may take longer for it to be effective, but you would probably experience less crying and tantrums, so it might be a little easier to implement. For graduated feeding, you would pick a much later bedtime. So you would put your child to bed at a time much later than he normally falls asleep and gets sleepy. Because the goal would be that your child will be so tired that he falls right asleep. So without too much of the intervention or hassle. So you will keep your child awake and do whatever to keep him awake and until a much later bedtime and he's so tired, so and you put your child to bed. That way your child is not associating bedtime with lots of problem behaviors. So if you go through 3-4 nights with success that your child falls asleep quickly, and then you can move your bedtime up by, say, 15 minutes at a time. And if your child is successful with moved up bedtime, so and for about 3-4 nights, and then you can move it up by another 15 minutes until you eventually reach the desired bedtime. So it might take longer, so take a couple of weeks for you to achieve the desired bedtime, so but then you will probably experience a little bit less crying of tantrum. So I usually talk to the parents to see what their comfort level is. So some parents can do the progressive waiting and just get it done, so in a few nights in about a week, so and some parents just can't do that, so and opt to do the graduated feeding. So either way is okay. So what your comfortable level would be. So for sleep association, the key would be to teach the child to help the child associate sleeping sleep with falling asleep in a bed in a dark, quiet room rather than being patted or rocked or external help for them to fall asleep. So that way they wake up, everything is the same. And when they wake up during the night, they should find themselves the same place where they were when we fell asleep without anything changed. And they should trust that no changes were made or will be made after they fall asleep. Next slide will be slide 15. And I will quickly talk about nighttime waking. And usually when you address the bedtime difficulty, and that helps the nighttime waking itself. And at night, when we are sleeping, we cycle between different sleep stages. So like the active sleep is called rapid eye movement, the REM sleep, and that is when we dream and our brain is active. And the deep sleep is the non-REM sleep. That's when we kind of are deeply asleep and cannot be wake up and can't hear anything. So we kind of cycle between these REM sleep and non-REM sleep stages. So usually that could cause us to wake up in between these cycles. So it is totally normal for children to wake up a couple of times so during the night. To address those issues, so one of the methods is called sleep restriction. So if your child frequently wakes up, so you can start with kind of 90% of the time your child may actually need. And you wake up your child earlier in the morning to create a new sleep time. So you wake up your child, say, 30 minutes or an hour earlier, and that would create some a little bit mild sleep deprivation, so which could help your sleep your child fall asleep a little better and at night and stay asleep. And then you increase the time, so you delay it by 15 minutes at a time until you reach the normal wake-up time, so to help your child sleep better. Let's see. I think we are running out of time. So the last thing is about the scheduled awakening, so which sounds crazy. So if your child wakes up pretty frequently, so this method would have you wake up your child before the time he normally wakes up at night. So if your child typically wakes up about 3 hours after falling asleep, and you would wake up your child by gently touching him or shaking him, so to the point that your child seems to be awake, and then just let him fall back asleep. And then usually that disrupts that cycle of waking up frequently at night. As we see, we are reaching our time. And thank you very much for listening to the presentation. And if you have any questions, you're welcome to contact me or email me afterwards. Thank you. Back to Kelly.
Thank you. To help us evaluate and improve our program, please complete the following short survey. If you are a Cigna employee, we ask that you please refrain from participating in this survey. After the last question, we will be ending the call. Your individual responses will be kept confidential as well. And we'll go ahead and we'll start with question one. This session provided me with education on strategies to help my child or family member with autism sleep better. Press star 1 if you strongly agree. Star 2 if you agree, star 3 if you disagree, and star 4 if you strongly disagree. And we'll pause just for a moment for your responses. Again, that's star 1 for strongly agree, star 2 for agree, star 3 for disagree, and star 4 for strongly agree, disagree. We'll go ahead and move on to our second question. This session educated me on establishing a good sleep-wake schedule for my child. Press star 1 if you strongly agree, star 2 if you agree, star 3 if you disagree, and star 4 if you strongly disagree. Again, that's star 1 for strongly agree, star 2 for agree, star 3 for disagree, and star 4 for strongly disagree. And we'll go ahead and move on to our next question. Question 3 is, overall, this session has met my expectations. Please select one of the following responses. Star 1 for strongly agree, star 2 for agree, star 3 if you disagree, and star 4 if you strongly disagree. And we'll go ahead and move on to our next question. Question 4, I would recommend this program to others. Star 1 if you agree, and star 2 if you do not agree. And we'll pause just for a moment. And we'll go ahead to our last question. Please select the response that best describes your role in the life of an individual with autism. Star 1, I am a parent of a child with autism. Star 2, I am a family member of a child with autism. And star 3 would be other. Again, star 1, I am the parent of a child with autism. Star 2, I am a family member of a child with autism. And star 3 is other. And again, we thank you for your feedback and for participating in our program. I will go ahead and turn the program back over to the speakers if you have any comments.
Thank you so much for attending, and thank you, Jane, for providing such wonderful insights. Again, if you have questions about therapies discussed today, please contact the autism team by calling the number on the back of your insurance card. We will be taking a break in the next few months for the holidays, but please mark your calendars to join our next Autism Awareness Seminar on January 9th. At 1 p.m. Eastern Time, 10 a.m. Pacific Time, when we will be discussing community inclusion for your child with autism. Thank you and have a great day.